Hey guys, welcome to Sports Spectrum. I am Jason Romano. Today's episode is presented by our new football show. It's called Sports Spectrum's Weekly Slant. And you can hear this new show and watch this new show every single Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern live and then streaming on our YouTube channel, on our Facebook channel, and of course at our website, sportsspectrum.com. We are doing what we do the best, and that is bring Jesus back into the conversation, and we're doing it through the sport of football. So make sure you tune in every Wednesday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, on sportsspectrum.com and on our Facebook and YouTube channels for our brand new football show. It's called Sports Spectrum's Weekly Slant. Check it out today at sportsspectrum.com.
Welcome to Sports Spectrum, where we bring Jesus back into the conversation. Here's your host, former ESPN producer, Jason Romano.
And welcome everyone to today's show. I am Jason Romano. This is the Sports Spectrum podcast. Make sure you check out our website, sportsspectrum.com, for all of our content. And if you have a guest idea or a show topic that you want to see or hear on Sports Spectrum, I want to give you my email address, and you can reach me directly, jason@sportsspectrum.com. jason@sportsspectrum.com. I would love to hear from you. And today, we got another great guest on the show and a wonderful conversation with Dave Alpern. He is the president of Joe Gibbs Racing. Now, he started his career working with Joe Gibbs Racing as an unpaid intern selling T-shirts in the newly formed Joe Gibbs Racing. And now here he is almost 30 years later, and he is the president of Joe Gibbs Racing. He's been that way since 2016. He's leading a team of more than 500 employees. We were talking after we recorded the podcast about just being the president of a company in the midst of a pandemic and getting his teams ready and in the playoffs for NASCAR. Just so much going on, and Dave Alpern is leading the way. He's also an author, and he's got a new book called Taking the Lead: Winning Business Principles That Fuel Joe Gibbs Racing. Dave Alpern is our guest today, and he's got a great story. We don't just talk about taking the lead. Dave's got a wonderful testimony of faith in his own story, and particularly in his Jewish dad's story. You're going to want to hear that. It's coming up right now with Dave Alpern on Sports Spectrum. Let's take a listen. Dave, it's so good to have you here, and being an author, that takes some getting used to, doesn't it? Congratulations, by the way. I mean, I know when people have referenced to me as being an author, and I'm like, man, that just sounds weird. But yeah. I'm so grateful that that opportunity came. As he said, it sunk in a little bit for you.
Well, you're still you're doing twice as good as I have, because you've written two, and I've said a few times I'm a one and done, but you don't ever say never. You might have said that after your first.
I thought the same thing too. That's right.
Yeah, no, you know, I still don't think of myself as an author. I think of myself, you know, as somebody who had a corporate career and a story to tell that I think resonated with others. And you know, the author is certainly not my primary job, and I had some help with it, you know, but all that to say, I think and hope that my story resonates with folks. And so what's been really the best part for me is, you know, the book went out the first week of June, and every day I get either a text or an email or something about the book. And that's been such an encouragement to me, is when you hear somebody tell you, hey, I just want to tell you that, gosh, I really, this one section, it was like you were talking to me, or whatever it was, that makes it worth it. Because as you know, when you're writing it, there's a time. And matter of fact, the month before I turned it into the publisher, I told my wife, I'm not turning this in. I'm just not going to do it. She's like, what are you talking about? And I said, no, I just don't think it's very good, or, you know, whatever. And it's because you're so close to your own story that you're just not sure. And so fortunately the response has been great, and that's been a real blessing to me.
Yeah. You think, does anybody really want to read my story?
No, I mean,
that, right? And then you write it, and you write it because you believe in it. But the start of writing a book, I think, is the hardest part. What was the What was the ambition? What was the reasoning in your mind behind writing a book? Because for me, I remember when the first person said to me, Jason, you need to write a book on this topic. It was forgiveness. And my friend who was a pastor said to me, you need to write this book. And I laughed at him. I said, I haven't written anything. I don't like writing. I'm a producer. I'm a behind the scenes guy. Yeah. I'm audio, I'm visual, I'm digital. I'm not a writer. What are you talking about? He said, no, more people need to hear your story. You need to write it. And so I started exploring the idea. And now I have two of them. What was your initial idea or reasoning behind wanting to write this book?
So honestly, it started over a decade ago because of my father. My father had had a background in the CIA. Very interesting. I was born in a foreign country, as was one of my sisters. My dad spoke language, multiple languages. Hmm. And he later in life retired from the government. I didn't know my dad worked until I was 16. He retired and went into private business and said, my whole childhood, I thought my dad would say I worked at the Pentagon. So I knew he worked for the government, but I didn't know for who. So when he retired when I was 16, I was like, okay, well, that explains a lot. And, you know, my parents divorced when I was 8. And it was a really hard, it was difficult. You know, my dad honestly was kind of a stud in hindsight when I heard all this. Anyway, long story short, my dad started writing a book, and in the same year he got cancer, and he didn't finish. And I had begged him to let me record his story so that we could finish it for him if he didn't, and he did, and he didn't let us do that. And so I just remember thinking, gosh, how much would I have loved in future generations to know his story? And that was when I thought, hey, my story is far from over yet, and nor is it far from it, nor is it as interesting as my dad's, but I really want to document this if for no other reason than for my future generations to know God's faithfulness to me and this little racing team that I started working with for free, and how that evolved into me becoming the president. So I started on my phone, just voice memos and things. I had a little app called Book, and I would just, for about 5, 6, 7 years, I started accumulating stories, principles. I'd be in the car, I'd be in my prayer journal, whatever it was. You know, sometimes in the middle of the night, I'd wake up and I'd go, oh my gosh, I got to write down to say this. But it wasn't until, you know, JD got sick, and then I actually became president, where the story began to make sense. And I remember a friend of mine who wrote a book saying, when I asked him, how'd you know when you wrote a book? He goes, you got to have something to say first. And so for me, it was, first of all, do I have something to say? And I think my story, I started to feel like, hey, my story might resonate with people. You know, this idea of your career not starting the way you think it would, being frustrated, frankly, for a long period of that, not feeling appreciated, not feeling utilized, feeling like you're not even in your sweet spot. You know, God, what are you doing? Am I being wasted here? Am I a failure? Trying to live up to your dad's expectations, sort of all those things. And for me, that at that point where I was named president, which at that point sort of the light bulb went off, and I realized, gosh, for 20 years God's been preparing me for a job I had no idea was even an option.
Right.
This is when the book sort of made sense, and I prayed about it with my wife, because I didn't want to write a book that stunk. So I was like, I'm only going to do this. I met with a book agent. The book agent said, I think you got a book there. We wrote a proposal, and I prayed about it with my wife, and I said, if we get a publisher, we'll do it. If we don't, I'll write it myself, and I'll give it to the boys as sort of a journal. Mm. And that was how it went. And Tyndall, took it, and I had a collaborator to help me write it. And I describe him as an interior decorator. He helped arrange the furniture that was very sloppy. And it was, it would have been really hard for me. I'm very ADD. It would have been hard to do it without him. So that's kind of a long version of it. Really kind of came to fruition about 3 years ago is when I said, all right, I'm really going to do this. And then when we got the publisher, the writing process was maybe a little bit over a year. Not my favorite thing in the world. Again, I'm not a writer, and but I was really grateful to be able to, put my story on paper. And it, again, it really hope it resonates with folks.
Yeah, we'll talk a little bit more about the book in a second. It's called Taking the Lead, Winning Business Principles That Fuel Joe Gibbs Racing. How did you meet Joe Gibbs? I want you to tell that story. Yeah. I mean, I'm asking a question that I know the answer to because I read your book, but I want to hear the story. I think our audience would love to hear how you became a part of Joe Gibbs Racing and actually met him.
Yeah, so often they say, you know, in business, it's connections and contacts. And so I actually grew up with the family. So seventh grade, middle school in Northern Virginia, outside of DC. Kid walks in, JD Gibbs, new to town. He's just moved in and his dad's the coach of the Redskins. And, you know, if you're not from the DC area, you may not know this, but in DC, nobody agrees on anything. It's a divided city, as we know. Except there's one thing that actually draws the city together, and that is the football team when they're good. And it's been a long time since they're good.
Yeah.
But, you know, so here comes the new coach of the Washington football team. And the funny thing is he goes 0-5 in his start. And so JD and I become friends. He actually, I tell in the book, JD actually spent the night in my house with another buddy the weekend that his dad went 0-5. And I'm thinking, hey, it's been nice knowing you, but they're about to run your dad out of town. You know, tell him, good job, Lombardi. You're doing a great job, you know. And so, you know, that's how it started. So I became friends with the family, and JD and I ended up going to the same high school together. And it's funny because I had no business being his friend. And I talk about this in the book where JD ended up in high school being this all-American. He was the quarterback of the football team. He was great looking. His dad was a coach of the Skins. He was the most popular guy at school. I was a late bloomer. I went into high school. I hadn't reached puberty yet. I was like 85 pounds. I was this little twerp. And for whatever reason, JD just, you know, befriended me. And I was buddies with JD. And again, in the movies, we wouldn't have been friends, but in real life, JD, you know, JD was my buddy. And we went off to different colleges. And when Coach decided to leave the NFL and start a NASCAR team, they needed a gopher. They needed cheap labor. And I remember asking JD later in life, you know, you had so many friends. Why'd you pick me? You know, I got picked to be an unpaid intern out of college. And he just said, because I knew I could count on you. And so it came down to all of those years of being friends was sort of auditioning for a job. I had no idea, but he was watching my character, Joe was. And, you know, it's, again, there's a lot of lessons in that, but it came down to, he didn't say, hey, you were the smartest friend I have, or you were the best at X, Y, or Z. It was just, I could count on you. And so that's something anyone can control. Being dependable, hey, that's a choice you make. You know, you're going to be dependent. What does that look like? Being faithful, being loyal, all those things. And that's ultimately what got me the audition, you know, or what got me the opportunity to come have the glamorous start that I had, which I'm being sarcastic, you know, to be the glamorous unpaid intern. But each of those things was sort of an audition. But yeah, it all started as friends. And again, I grew up feeling sort of as a part of the family, and still to this day, you know, obviously Coach is like a second dad and sort of a mentor to me, and somebody that I admire just as much now as I did as a seventh grader. Hmm. Actually, I didn't admire him too much when he was 0-5, but quickly I began to admire him.
Well, the crazy football fan that I am, I remember they were 0-5. They actually finished the year strong and they won the Super Bowl next year. So it worked out okay. For Joe Gibbs and that 80s, you know, Washington football team was just amazing, winning three Super Bowls. So, yeah, they were good. You mentioned JD, knowing him when you were young. In your book, you have an endorsement from Toby Mac, the musician, the singer-songwriter. Yeah. And it says that you guys have known each other since high school. So I'm imagining, I think Toby's in his mid to late 50s. So that spans a long time that you've known him. How did you and Toby meet? Was that kind of a circumstance?
So a really crazy story. Toby Mac lived in the same neighborhood as JD and Coach. So Toby's dad, Kenny McKeon, God bless him. He passed away a couple years ago, but Kenny and Coach were good friends. And so Toby would be at the games. And I actually have one of my fondest memories was Super Bowl 26. That was Joe's, you know, last of his three Super Bowls.
Yeah.
We were in Minneapolis and I have a picture of so another buddy, Moose, who was my best man at my wedding. Moose, JD, Toby, all of us were buddies. And I have a picture of all of us, you know, standing there at the party after the Super Bowl together. We kind of grew up doing that. Real quick, funny story. I mentioned Moose. Moose went to Liberty with Toby and Michael Tate and some of the other guys originally from that DC talk, which, you know, was where Toby got to start. Yeah. Moose was on the first album as Valet Beat. He was the beatbox. And kind of quit the band thinking, a Christian rap group, you guys are never going to amount to anything. And so we, to this day, he gets harassed. We're like, hey, nice move there, Einstein. That was not
real
smart.
What's Moose doing today? What did he end up doing?
No, Moose is a great guy. He spent many years on Young Life staff and is now doing really well in real estate, does real estate. We call him our real estate mogul. No, he's up in Ashburn in Northern Virginia. And again, still best friends. And we, Moose and I both had the privilege of speaking at JD's funeral. Toby, again, pretty busy job. Don't get to see each other a ton. You know, he's down there in Franklin, but some fun history with Washington, with Toby and, you know, really from the early days.
I always think it's interesting when you can say you knew someone before they were whatever. And so you can kind of share those stories and then be able to keep those friendships because they're genuine, you know, because once you become a certain status level, like a Toby Mac now, it's got to be really hard to find new friends because of how
you never know
famous you are or whatever. And people and thinking somebody's wants to be my friend, but they really want to be my friend because I can give them something or because they can say they're hanging with a Toby Mac. It's got to be hard to find friends once you become, I mean, you're with Coach Gibbs, so I'm sure you've been around a lot of people, especially working at Joe Gibbs Racing. It's really hard once you become a public figure and a lot of people know you to find new friends, isn't it?
It is. And what's interesting is you do find that a lot of people like Toby, people like, I think of the drivers, no matter how big they get, their default always seems to be those friends that they did have in the early days. You call it their posse or whatever that hangs around them, the entourage. Yeah. Usually it's made up of people who were there from the beginning. They're buddies from childhood or whatever. And I think it's because of what you're talking about, because you always know, you know, they were just rooting for you. Now they're thrilled that you made it probably, but they're not your friends because you made it. And I do think that it's difficult. And, you know, you think of those folks trying to find a spouse or whatever, you always hope, hey, was it somebody that maybe you knew before you were big? But I'm sure it's hard. Obviously I can't relate to that because I'm not famous, but I've been around a lot of folks. And there's some degree of that. And if I'm honest, it's hard sometimes in business. You try not to be jaded and be skeptical, thinking that this person's got an agenda or whatever, when they come meet with you, often they do. But, you know, there's a section in the book where I talk about treating people like a soul and not a transaction. And that's kind of how I try to approach everything is, hey, look, regardless of what this person's agenda or motivation is, I'm dealing with a soul who is valued and is wonderfully made, and I ought to treat him as such. And, you know, I can't control what their agenda is, but I can control how I treat them. So it's probably a good, but sometimes it's hard to do.
Guys, want to take a quick break and remind you again about our Sports Spectrum magazine, our quarterly magazine available to order right now at sportspectrum.com. You can sign up. It's just $18 for 1 year. It's super cheap. You get 4 issues plus a couple of bonus issues. And I think it's the best thing that we do here at Sports Spectrum. It's certainly the only thing that we charge money for, but it's money that goes back into this ministry. And it's a great resource, the magazine, something you can actually hold in your hand, read, and give to someone else. Our Olympic edition is out right now, and you can subscribe at sportspectrum.com. You get 1 year, it's $18, but you can get 2 years for $30. So you can get a bunch of money saved off if you get a 2-year subscription. And every subscription now, you also get the magazine in your hand, but you get a digital version of the magazine emailed to you as well. So you get a digital subscription, you get the actual tangible magazine in your hand subscription, and you can do it all at sportspectrum.com for 1 year, super cheap, $18. Sign up today at sportspectrum.com. We are the intersection of sports and faith. Your faith is very important to you, Dave Alpern. Take us through your journey to Christ, because I know that Coach Gibbs and JGR and even JD had a lot of influence on your walk and you becoming a follower of Christ.
Yeah. I grew up not in the church. My father was Jewish, but we did not, you know, I went to a few bar mitzvahs of his friends' kids growing up. We celebrated Christmas, but for no real religious reason. Had never been to a church really in my entire life until I was 17. Mm-hmm. In high school, the ministry of Young Life, maybe some of your listeners are familiar with that.
Absolutely.
I remember getting invited to a Young Life meeting at Joe Gibbs's house. And of course, in the 80s, who wouldn't want to go to Joe Gibbs? They could have been, didn't matter what they were talking about.
That's right.
And as you would imagine, there were hundreds of kids packed into the basement of their house. And Coach would say hey to the kids as they came. And here's JD, the most popular kid at school, hosting an event at his house. He knew how to use his influence. And that's one thing I talk about in the book was JD taught me the power of influence. But I went to those meetings and frankly, there was something about them that drew me there, but I was very skeptical. My dad was an electrical engineer and I had been taught to sort of analyze things and everything has to, you know, be able to be proven. And I just remember thinking if I buy into this quote unquote, my dad is going to think I've lost my mind. And so I resisted. I went for a year and my Young Life leaders, John and Rick, who I talk about in the book, you know, one of the things that stuck out to me is they didn't like, you know, when I didn't respond to the gospel, they didn't cross me off and move on to the next kid. They just kept loving on me and they'd show up, they'd ask me questions and I'd see them at the school. They'd go to McDonald's afterwards. And after the meetings, we'd all go to McDonald's and they'd plop down and they'd go, yeah, how was your week? How was your test? Whatever. And I was like, huh. And I would watch them and I would watch JD. And the more I would hear the message and they would share the gospel at the end of the meetings, the more I would connect it to JD and go, that's what's different about him. Like I was seeing it lived out in him, hearing it talked about up front. He was the picture of what it meant to follow Christ as a high school kid. And that was attractive to me. But it took me about a year and a half to put it all together to where, I mean, I was actually in a Bible study. One of my leaders had a small group and I went to that for 9 months and hadn't even really started that journey with Christ myself. I was going and I was learning, but I was like, and again, part of it was, what's my dad going to say? Part of it was, you know, this idea that, am I committing intellectual suicide by giving my faith? Because again, when you explain faith to someone who, yeah, who doesn't get it, it's, you know, hey, the gospel is folly to people who are perishing, and you listen to it and you say, that's crazy. But what it came down to me was, it's either true or it isn't. I mean, it's very simple. This either happened, Jesus Christ either came to earth and was the Son of God and resurrected, or he didn't. It either happened or it didn't. And if it happened, it has to be the most important thing in my life. It has to be, or it isn't. And so, and it's like, I ran from that, but at some point you go, I have to come to grips with this. I have to come to terms with it. And it was my senior year of high school. I just said, all right, you know, and I remember hearing this phrase and it resonated. And I think I've mentioned it in the book. It's this idea of, I thought I had to figure everything out. And I was like, I haven't gone to church. I don't understand a lot of the Bible. And I don't, and I remember hearing this phrase, you know, starting your journey with Christ means giving all you know of yourself to all you know of Christ. Mm. And it doesn't have to be a lot. And for me, I was like, okay, well, what I know of Christ now is enough to know I got to buy in. I'm all in. I don't know a whole lot. I don't know a lot of background. If you ask me what's in, you know, Romans or what, I would have no idea, but my 17-year-old self is saying I'm in. And so that's kind of how it started for me. And I started that journey and it's been one ever since. And I've always had a very soft spot in my heart for the ministry of Young Life. I became a leader. I was a volunteer leader for 10 years. And then, as I say, when I was no longer cool to high school kids, I switched to the adult committee where you just kind of raise money for the leaders that are out in the field. And I miss those days. I went kicking and screaming into that role, and so that's kind of my involvement now, but I've seen how it changes the lives of kids and it's fun. All three of my boys are Young Life leaders as we speak. Two out of college and being adult leaders and one still in college in Nashville. And so it's a ministry that's real important to us, but that's really my journey started, you know, and Young Life is a parachurch ministry that's geared towards reaching unchurched kids. And I was one of them.
Yeah. I love that story. Yeah. And I know someone who's a Young Life leader, Kenny. He's here in Connecticut where I live. And I just watch him, like you say, love on those kids who are unchurched and come from different backgrounds. And yeah, the joy of watching them grow and learn about Jesus and then accepting him and saying yes to him and beginning that process is just awesome to see. And I know Kenny does such a great job with Young Life, and it's such an important ministry for young people. Once you began that journey, and maybe even take it to now, you said your father, I believe, is no longer with us. What was that like, kind of walking through this as you grew up into your 20s and 30s and the relationship with your dad, knowing that he was Jewish?
You know, interestingly, I knew that the only way I was going to have an impact on my dad was for him to see it over a period of time. It wasn't going to be through words. It was going to be seeing that this is real and it's consistent. And if I'm honest, you know, 10, 15 years in, I kind of stopped praying for my dad. You know, I'd throw in the token prayer, but in my mind, I was like, my dad's never going to come to the faith, you know, come to faith. My dad's, you know, got a ton of money and he's super smart, super successful. There's no quote need for him to change anything. And so, you know, I did my thing and I kind of talked about my faith journey in the book a lot about how JD was kind of my picture in every phase of life. And, you know, I grew in my faith and, you know, the Lord sent an amazing godly woman into my life, Stacy, who's, we've been married 27 years, but all that to say, I kind of gave up on my dad. And what was crazy was I mentioned my dad got cancer and my dad ended up meeting the Lord late in life through my father-in-law. So my wife's dad, also an electrical engineer, like my dad, prayed with my dad and led him to the Lord, and which is an amazing thing. And what was just, you know, one of my life highlights, my dad got baptized with my three sons at a little church in Georgia where he'd moved, and they all got baptized together. You know, my dad had ended up having about a year and a half left on this earth before he passed away, but what an amazing legacy. And it's funny, I go back to when you talk to, you know, whether it's Young Life or whatever ministry you're a part of, I try to encourage Young Life leaders. Again, I think this applies to pastors, anyone who's listening, who, you know, when you think about sharing your faith, when you reach someone with the gospel, you're not just reaching them. You know, you think about that's three generations of my family that are transformed because one guy walked into my high school and had the guts to, you know, track me down and love on me, Rick, you know, and I think about that, you think about legacy. And so when you're thinking about being bold with someone, again, it's not just that person, because when that person turns their heart to Christ, you're transforming generations of their family often. And again, my family's an example of that. So I'm so grateful for that. But yeah, so my dad had that experience late in his life, and it was amazing. I mean, it was really a miracle. And unfortunately for him, it took being broken, which it often does. He had a lot of financial issues late in life, relational issues, health issues, and kind of realized, you know, that a lot of the things he'd been chasing weren't gonna be there for him and weren't gonna matter. And, like I say in the book, there's no titles on our tombstones. You know, when JD passed away in his amazing hour and a half service, there was one thing that was not mentioned once, and that is anything that he accomplished at work. Not one thing. Hmm. Not one thing did they talk about. No business deals. No races won. Now, they talked about the influence he had at work and how he used work as a ministry, but it was the legacy of the people that he impacted. It wasn't the things that he did. And, you know, most of us adults, you know, particularly men, just struggle with thinking that that's what it's about, that that's what's going on our tombstone. And it's really not. I've been to a lot of graveyards. I've never seen anyone's title on one yet. So,
usually loving husband, dad, and follower of Christ, if you're a believer. Yeah, it's not that.
Yeah.
Dave Alpern's our guest here on Sports Spectrum. He's the president of Joe Gibbs Racing. That story with your dad, it really resonates with me because my dad is 70 years old and he was, you know, struggled with alcohol for a long time. He did get sober, I should say, 9 years ago, but he hasn't gotten saved. He's still not a follower of Christ. And I pray for him a lot, but I've kind of become numb to it, kind of like you were too. Like, okay, that'll happen someday. I'm thinking about my dad and we have a good relationship now. It's not great, but it's not terrible. It was terrible for many years, but that's an encouragement for me. And I hope the listeners as well to know it's never too late. And if you have an unsaved parent or a relative that's getting up there in age, And yes, sometimes it takes like a broken,
yeah,
a brokenness within you to say, okay, I can't control this anymore. God, I give it to you. But I just want you to know that. And I hope you realize that.
I appreciate that.
And I'm really like to dive a little bit more into that for you to know, because your dad's not with us anymore, how important that story is to share with other people, because it gives them hope and it gives them encouragement.
Well, and then meanwhile, I have my mother, who I love dearly, who doesn't know the Lord. And for whatever reason, I'm terrified to talk to her about it.
I feel the same way with my dad. Isn't that weird?
It makes no sense. And I do pray for my mom. The crazy thing about my dad, I don't think I've shared this much. You know, I knew he was meeting with my father-in-law and that my father-in-law was going to, you know, was going to lay the smack down with the, you know, he was going to be sharing with him. But what's crazy is when my dad called to tell me, it was a couple of days after that meeting, the phone rang and I looked at it. I'll never forget, because I was on my way to the airport to pick somebody up. And when my phone rang, and this has to be the Holy Spirit gave me this, I literally looked at the phone and I said, my dad met the Lord. He's telling me, like, I knew when he was calling me that that's what he was calling for. And he called and he said, I had the most wonderful visit with Jack. And I just want, and he told me, and I just remember it was like, I got this quick glimpse of it right before. No, it was very special. And it was one of those just things where you're like, gosh, I'm, you know, Lord, I'm sorry I doubted you. And, you know, I just. So you don't know. And, I think that's I hope that is an encouragement to other people. Cause for me, if you pictured the person in your life that you would say is the furthest from meeting the Lord, that was my dad for me. And I was like, there's no chance. And the point was, he'd been watching me for all those years, but it was somebody else, you know, the Lord worked through somebody else to sort of, to bring him there. And that's okay. You know, we think, well, it's all on me and, you know, whatever, but he's watching me. And, you know, I remember him making the statement that, you know, the people I've admired the most in my life, I've realized are all people who have faith in Christ. And he goes, I kind of put that together. And so that means I was one of them. Joe Gibbs was one of them. Joe Gibbs had been calling my dad. And another pastor, Mike Minter, who's up at Reston Bible in Northern Virginia, had met my dad. And, you know, all these people were, you know, planting seeds that ended up, you know, there was a harvest and it was awesome. And so I wish my dad had 4 years on earth as a believer, but you know, I know I'll get to be with him again. And that's such an encouragement.
Yeah. We can rejoice in that for sure. JD, I want to ask you about, you talked about the impact he had as a best friend growing up, certainly the impact he had on your faith and young life. Obviously he had a huge impact on you in the role that you're in becoming president of Joe Gibbs Racing in many ways because of what JD had to walk through. Can you kind of take us through what the circumstances were surrounding you becoming president and kind of what that was like? You write about that a lot in Taking the Lead as well. But just kind of take us through that, because that's got to be tough watching your best friend go through what he went through, but then also replacing him at the same time, you know, at the job.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I know as believers, we often think, all right, I've got this list that when I stand before the Lord, I've got to ask all these questions. That's probably at the top of it for me, you know, that I still wrestle with. Now I've had some time to see how the Lord's used it and I'm much more at peace with it. But so 2014-ish, JD just started showing symptoms that we attributed to sort of a midlife crisis. And it was, he was checked out. He wouldn't pay attention. You'd come to talk to him and he'd just stare at his phone. And then the next day, you'd bring up something in reference to what you'd talked about the day before, and he'd have no idea what you were talking about. And you're like, dude, are you just checked out? Are you, you know, what's going on? And, yeah. You know, our company had grown. We were, you know, over 500 people at that point. It definitely was wearing on all of us. Just the heaviness of, we've got these huge sponsor deals and drivers, and you're just dealing with so much stuff. We just thought, man, it's getting to them. We actually had an intervention and said, you need to take a sabbatical. You ought to get away for 6 months. And he didn't want to do that. And meanwhile, you know, his wife, Melissa, who, by the way, I've known since fifth grade, you know, she thought he was just being that way at home. She'd seen the same thing, but didn't know he was being that way at work. And so, you know, she's thinking, maybe there's something wrong at home. We're thinking, you know, there's something wrong at work, but there was just something wrong with JD. So we ended up, he got some tests at the Mayo Clinic and ended up having a, you know, a rare early onset dementia. And yeah, his deterioration began and, you know, by 2015, you know, I would say even by the end of 2014, he was not himself. And he, you know, and there was this really, his illness was over 4 years, you know, really 4 or 5 years. And it was horrible, but there was this awkward, you know, 2 or so year period where, you know, for the first 6 months, we didn't want to tell anybody because we knew the minute it became public, their the lives would change for their kids and everyone would start saying, how's your dad? How's your dad? So you hit it as long as you could. And then there was this, you know, when is he not fit to drive anymore? Do you let him go into meetings and embarrass himself? You know, I love JD and I didn't want him to be embarrassed. At the same time, if you start removing him from the meetings, well, then what does he do? He goes and sit, you know, and each stage was just this horrible, you know, these decisions. And you'd have these hard conversations where Joe, as the dad, wanted him to be in everything. And I, as his friend, was like, well, we're embarrassing him and people think he's, you know, there's something wrong with him. And so it was about almost about a year or so into his illness. People actually started coming to me. I mean, I'll never forget our chaplain. I talked about this. The book came into my office, shut the door. And he said, something's on my heart. I need to share with you. He just said, I think you need to be the president. And I was kind of like, well, what are you talking about? And I was like, I can't make myself the president. He said, no, you can't, but you can start acting like it. The company needs somebody to fill in for JD and you're the only one that can do it. So I started going to meetings on JD's behalf and, you know, just doing the things that I knew JD couldn't do anymore as our president. And after a period of time, Coach came to me and said, you know, we want to name you president. And again, what should have been from a career standpoint, the best day of my life was actually one of the worst days of my life because it was this affirmation that JD's not getting better. This is real. You know, I work for this family business that for 20 years I wrote in my journal. I was frustrated about this glass ceiling that there was no chance. And now all of a sudden I'm the president and I'm like, well, this isn't what I wanted. I didn't mean that, you know, Lord, I take it all back, you know, and there was this balance of, on the one hand, if I'm excited about it and I embrace it, I felt like I was betraying JD. Like, how could you embrace but if I didn't, then I was letting down and betraying Joe and the family's trust in me. And so it was just this awkward no man's land of, I don't even know how to act. I don't know how to respond to this because for 20 years, I was the chief of staff for JD, who was the president of his family's business. My name's not Gibbs. You know, I signed up to serve JD, not to be him. It's like, whoa. I didn't want this.
Yeah.
And so it's been 6 or so years now. And, you know, look, I mean, I share this. It's probably one of the main reasons I really wanted to write a book was more than anything. It's almost like I wanted to get permission from the public to actually embrace this role, because for all these years I've wrestled internally with, you know, this, you know, again, this balance of not wanting to have my best friend's job and also wanting to honor the Lord who clearly prepared me for it, you know? And so it's not totally comfortable still for me, you know, if I'm honest. It's kind of, it's been a strange, you know, really unfortunate process, but I've seen, you know, the Lord's faithfulness in it. And, you know, JD passed away, 2.5 years ago. So January of 2019, we lost JD, and, you know, it's, we've got a memorial kind of him that I see every day when I walk in the office, which is tough. And you know, he was really the heartbeat of the culture around here. And so I feel like that's really a big part of my purpose here, is that I'm really the main link to him and to the culture of what it was like and how he handled things. And I try to do that as best as I can, while at the same time being me. You know, again, I don't think the Lord wants me to be JD. He wants me to be me and lead in the way that I would lead, but I have that link to JD as well. And I feel like I balance that in with my own style as well. And, that's kind of what I've been trying to do. But yeah, it was from 2014 to 2019 when JD passed away, I would say it was brutal. And I don't know how, apart from the hope and the hope in Christ, you would get through that at all. I have no idea.
Yeah, it's really tough. I want to be mindful of our time as we wind down. What's the best lesson that JD ever taught you that you're able to kind of take into your role now as president? And you watched him and you wrote about, I'm sure some of those principles and lessons, you know, that you wrote about are from him and lessons from him. What do you think is the one that carries with you as you now lead as a president of Joe Gibbs Racing? Yeah.
I actually think it's the concept I shared with you before about treating people like a soul and not a transaction, and how JD, you know, we always joked, and part of this was his personality. His excited and depressed were about an inch apart. JD was very steady, but he also had this way. And so whether it was a crisis, whether it was how he dealt with people, he was always JD. He wasn't, there was no ups and downs. If he was walking down sort of the grid, which is sort of, you know, before a race, you walk down pit road and that's sort of where everybody congregates. It didn't matter if it was a CEO or a pit crew member or an intern that he'd never met. JD just kind of treated everybody the same. He just had this way of, you know, you felt like you were JD's best friend. You know, I actually got to be his best friend, but everyone felt like they were JD's best friend. And that's just, it's a great lesson in business is you don't, you know, we talked about it at the beginning, is you always feel like somebody wants something. You didn't feel that way with JD. JD never treated somebody, never interacted with somebody with an agenda. It wasn't, hey, I'm going to be really nice to you. And then at the very end, I'm going to lay in with the ask, you know, I got to ask you for something or I want something. There was never that. And it's just a great lesson is that's, and by the way, it's a lot easier to live life that way. You don't have to keep track of stuff. Just treat everyone the way you'd want to be treated, you know, and I think JD was a model of, his service was proof of that. When you saw the impact he'd had on people and what people said about him, you know, it's just life well lived. And I think it's a great lesson for all of us in how we treat people.
Yeah. He is Dave Alpern. His book is called Taking the Lead, Winning Business Principles That Fuel Joe Gibbs Racing. It's out now, released back in June. My last question for you, Dave, is a question we ask all of our guests here on Sports Spectrum. What's God teaching you today? So we've been talking about a lot of the lessons and things that God has shown you and brought you through in your past, but he also teaches us new lessons every single day. As we sit here today and record this, what's he been showing you and teaching you now?
Yeah, well, I appreciate you asking that. I think there's quite a few things. I think my prayer life is kind of being transformed to where I'm trying to move away from just checking off a list to, you know, I just used this analogy, interestingly, with somebody the other day that, you know, you and I had this appointment today and I put it on my calendar. I was faithful to it. I didn't get distracted when I was in it. I was all in with you during this time. Yet we often don't do that with the Lord every day. You know, we have a time we set aside, but if my phone goes off or someone invites me to breakfast or I got something better to do, I don't even have to go on my calendar and change it. I just don't show up. And so I have really been convicted that, you know, I need to protect that time. And it's not just checking a box. It's, I am talking. This is a dynamic relationship with, you know, the risen God who is interacting with me. And so, you know, I'm trying to, and for me, again, I'm a little ADD and my time with the Lord had gotten a little robotic, you know, and I'm good at, I'll read my scripture or whatever. And my prayers might be checking a list, but am I really having a conversation like we're having where I'm listening, talking, I'm expecting, am I sharing these prayers with the expectation that God's going to, you know, again, not be Santa and answer all of them, but that he's listening and that, you know, his way is better than my way. And you know, just like I remember when JD got sick, one of my boys said, Dad, I thought everything works for good for those who love the Lord. You've always told me JD loves the Lord more than anyone you know. How do you explain this? Yeah. And my answer was, God's good's different than our good. I don't like it. And I talk in the book about having Lieutenant Dan moments with the Lord, where like in Forrest Gump, where Lieutenant Dan's at the top of the mast having it out. I've had it out and said, what are you doing? You know, I need JD. Yes. The world needs JD. Take someone else. Don't take him. So all that to say, I think really, you know, taking my time with the Lord and making it, being more faithful to it, and making it more personal, as opposed to just checking a box. Now there's discipline involved in it, and that's okay. It's better to have the discipline and do it than not do it. But that's kind of an area that I'm really working on. Cause I think, one of the wonderful guys who endorsed my book, from a Toyota executive, who's a great man of faith, told me, to be the best president of Joe Gibbs Racing, you first have to be the best follower of Christ and be the best dad. And you've got to have yourself in order.
Yeah.
And so I really believe that, you know, sometimes we skip over it to do those other things, when in reality, that's the most important thing. Everything else is an extension of that. So trying to get my relationship with God more personal and more, be more faithful to it.
Mm, that's really good. He is Dave Alpern. The book is called Taking the Lead. You guys got to go get a copy. It's really good. Lots of principles in there, business principles, but also really chock full of nuggets that you can apply to your own life and your journey, whether it's at home, in your relationship with the Lord, or just in your job. Dave, congratulations on the book. Thanks so much for sharing all the time that you have shared with us, and sharing your story. And hopefully we'll get to meet again sometime soon.
Jason, I really appreciate it. I want to add one thing. All of my author proceeds from the book are being donated to the J.D. Gibbs Legacy Fund, which awesome. which exclusively funds Young Life Urban at many of the under-resourced high schools here in North Carolina. What was really important to J.D. was that, you know, I mentioned before, Rick, we had a Rick that walked into our lives. Every kid deserves to have a Rick walk into his or her life, regardless of what school they go to. So what we're trying to do is make sure that every school in our Charlotte area is funded to have a person like Rick, these mentors to invest in the lives of adolescents, whether they be, you know, teen moms, whether they be have kids with disabilities, or whatever school they go to. So that's what the J.D. Gibbs Legacy Fund goes to. So
I'm love that. I'm so glad you said that. That's really great. So people need to go get a book. And now knowing that the proceeds are going to go help something even bigger than just Dave Alpern is awesome. So get the book. Dave, thanks again for being here.
Jason, thanks for having me. Thanks for listening too, everybody.
And many thanks to Dave Alpern. Taking the Lead is his new book, and he is the president of Joe Gibbs Racing. Honestly, when we were talking beforehand, I didn't know the full gamut of his story with his dad, growing up Jewish and then coming to faith in Christ, you know, just a year or so before he dies. That was not planned. That was not in my notes to talk about. And to me, that was the most impactful part of this conversation. Certainly his relationship with JD and the lessons he learned from him as well, JD Gibbs. But the story of his dad, like, that needs to be heard and told to other people who are struggling, including myself, with family members who haven't quite gotten there yet in their faith. And sometimes talking to our parents is the hardest thing to do about Jesus. And I know it's that way for me in some cases. So I hope Dave's story with his dad is an encouragement for you. I know it was for me. And as you think about this podcast, I want you to think about how you could share this with someone. Who can you share this with that's going through a similar circumstance as myself or Dave or whatever? Who can you share this with? And that's how I want you to view Sports Spectrum, and certainly this podcast. View it as a resource, as a way to introduce the gospel through the power of story on the intersection of sports and faith with someone. Maybe you know someone who loves Jesus and loves sports, but they have a relative who's just not quite there yet. Maybe you know someone who loves sports but doesn't quite have that faith in God as their priority right now. Man, share this with them. Let them know about Dave Alpern's story and the book again, Taking the Lead, Winning Business Principles That Fuel Joe Gibbs Racing. I think this is the perfect interview to share with someone. So thank you again for tuning in. You guys are awesome. We really do appreciate it. Every time you reach out to us, whether it's via email or social media or through our website, we see it, we hear you, and we're so grateful that you're out there. And that you value what we're doing here. And to God be the glory, right? Let's point everyone to Him. That's our goal. And that's what we want to do here at Sports Spectrum, is really emulate what John the Baptist talks about in the verse John 3:30, which is, He must increase, we must decrease. Let's increase Christ in our lives. Let's decrease ourselves and let's tell other people about Jesus. And that's what we're doing here at Sports Spectrum. Thanks for tuning in. We love you guys. We'll see you next time. Join us for a new episode. Have a great rest of your day and stay safe. See you soon.